Welcome, welcome to QT Conversations, the highlight of my week because we get to dig into relevant topics around tutoring with awesome people. So qualified tutor members and new qualified tutor members and some potential qualified tutor members who are looking to find out what it feels like to be safe, skilled and supported, which is what we're all about here. Everything that we do is about making sure that tutors can do their best work for every single student. And that's our way of really making a difference in this world, making a difference to students, making a difference to families, by making a difference to every single tutor. We've got World Tutors Day coming up, 2nd of July, which is a celebration of everything that we do all year round without people noticing. Parents will be invited to thank your tutor. You will be invited to join local meetups and nerd out with fellow tutors. And we have just launched our speaker application to contribute to 24 hours of lifelong learning. So anything that you know that you can share with other tutors, we want you to contribute. So a half hour presentation, if that's something that you feel you can do, to contribute to other tutors, to build your authority and your platform, and basically just to be a generous human. We've got somebody telling their story about things that they've learned. We've got somebody else focusing on English literature at GCSE and everything in between. Paul, maybe you can do something for us on science. Mandy, I don't know what your subject is yet, so I'm looking forward to finding out. And Jenna, I'm sure you're going to do something on neurospiciness and homeschooling for me. So lots and lots of good stuff for us to share. But today, the conversation, an open-ended, open forum discussion with no agenda except to explore. So not a debate, a discussion. I want to ask you about a conversation, a theme that is relevant to many, many tutors, and unconsidered by most parents and taken for granted by most students, which is whether or not a tutor needs to be a qualified teacher. Gulp. So firstly, I need you guys in the room to declare yourselves. Hands up if you are a qualified teacher. Good, okay, right, all right. And if you could just tell me, please, how many years of teaching experience you have. Mandy, can you go first?
Yes, sure. I've had, I've been working in schools for about 14 years. But I've actually, I've actually been a qualified teacher for 3 years.
Okay, interesting. So you started off as a TA?
I did, yes.
Got it. Dee, how many years of classroom experience did you have?
2 years in mainstream secondary and then nearly 13 years in a maritime academy.
Fantastic. Paul, how many years of classroom experience did you have?
I had 4 years of classroom experience I was doing private tutoring and I enjoyed it so much I gave up the schooling because this is much more fun.
That's it. We're coming back to that in a second. Helen, tell us your story, how you're a tutor and you didn't. And you're not a qualified teacher, please?
In a nutshell, I was in my PGCE year, got to the very end and developed chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME. So was unable to complete my teaching. I picked up tutoring to keep my hand in. That was 14 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
She's up to her elbows now. And Jenna?
Yes. I don't really know how to answer that. I have been tutoring professionally... it's 16, 17 years.
Okay, let me ask you a different question. Did you ever consider becoming a qualified teacher?
Yes, and immediately dismissed it.
Okay, go on. What was that fast thought that flitted through?
I was about 6 or 7, and I was like, nope, I am not going to torture children. I'm not going to traumatise children. My mother was a teacher. She was a special needs teacher and incredible at what she was doing. And I helped her. My mum is neurospicy as well and very dyslexic and dyscalculia. And I would type up all of her course notes. I'd help her make all of her resources. And I loved it. I loved learning about the neuroscience and everything. But even though I was a very high achieving student, I did have additional needs and I hated it and I couldn't do that to anyone else.
That's fascinating. And being a teacher's child is quite an interesting position to be in. Mandy, I've made an assumption that you're a primary teacher. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
So tell us the journey between going from being a TA to a teacher and now into tutoring, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes.
Go ahead, tell us your story.
Oh, sorry, miles away there. Well, I started working in schools when my son started nursery, and I then became a one-to-one, first of all, to a little boy with ADHD. I then worked in a couple of schools as a TA, and then I moved away and got a job in another school as a one-to-one to begin with, and then I became a class TA. My friend just basically asked me to join her to go to uni and see what teaching was all about, and she persuaded me to join the course with her, which I did, and I completed a foundation year. Then I went on and did my BA, and then I did my PGCE, and I developed rheumatoid arthritis about 2 years ago. So really this year I've started to struggle a lot in the classroom, constantly being on my feet. So I decided to look into becoming a tutor. So I've signed up with lots of companies, and I've just printed out flyers and business cards to start my own tuition company.
Good for you. And Mandy, it does occur to me that you've been on a really, really long route that's taken you right back to where you started, because you were working one-to-one with children at the beginning when your son went to nursery, and you've done all of that training and you've come right back to the beginning. And I'm going to ask you this in a second, because I'm going to Paul next. I'm going to be asking you later about what's different now, that what all of that training and that journey has given you, and how that's changed your practice. But Paul, could you tell us first, please, why tutoring's more fun?
I love teaching, and I love the one-to-one interaction with the kids. I'm actually on the spectrum myself, so being in a classroom was difficult for me as far as the Asperger's and autism is concerned. But it allows me to connect better with kids on a one-to-one basis. So I find it's absolutely brilliant for me. I do about 40 to 45 hours tutoring a week. So I worked it out the other day. Over the last 15 years, I've done about 15,000 hours of tutoring. So I've got a lot of experience with it, but you know, my diary's full. So you can't do any more, and you want to help more kids. It's one of the reasons why I wrote a book recently, to help, you know. And
what book did you write, Paul?
I wrote a book, it's called The Exam Slayer, How to Smash Your Exams Without Giving Up Your Screen Time. And it's designed for kids, because there's lots of books out there on exams and doing better in exams, but they don't write them for kids. They write them for adults. So if you try and read them as a kid, you're not going to read them.
Please, would you drop the link into the chat? Helen Osman, what took you so long?
Someone has done that. That's quick.
That's fantastic. So theexamslayer.com is where we can order your book.
Yep, or on Amazon, it's on there. And
that's good. I've got somebody at home who needs one of those.
There's a lot of simple stuff in there that you'll all probably be teaching kids to do anyway. But there's neuroscience behind it as well, and I've worked with neuroscientists with kids, particularly with kids with neurodiverse issues, and there's things in there that help them as well. And my aim is just to help as many kids as possible. I mean, I can tutor 45 a year, but when it comes down to it, there's thousands out there that are missing out. And they're missing out because there's lots of things that teachers just don't have the time to teach in school. And some of them don't know the stuff themselves, you know. And I see it when I'm teaching kids. I ask kids all the time, what do the teachers tell you to do for revision? You know, and the answers I get are read my notes and do some flashcards, but they don't teach them how to do really good flashcards, you know, and how How to get the best out of revision.
For you, Paul?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I teach kids exam technique almost more than I teach them the content, because the content is taught in school. Well. Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do. So,
fantastic.
Yeah,
Paul, hold on
been
a second. Helen, dive in there. Tell us about teaching exam technique, please.
Oh, it just came straight to my, I'm working with an A-level student at the moment that's got neurospiciness going on. I'm loving neurospicy. That's great. And actually, they can do the content. They can do the maths. They just can't interpret the question. So sorry to freak out the non-mathematicians. We've got maximum and minimum mentioned in the question. They can't equate that with what they actually need to do content-wise. So it's... yeah, part of it is going to be, it is doing the past papers, doing it again, look at your notes, but how do you draw out the bits that you need? What in the question tells you what the examiner's looking? That might be a purely mathsy, sciencey kind of thing compared to an examiner.
No, Jen is shaking her head.
Compared to a texty thing, but yeah, there's hints in the question.
There's always techniques. Go on, Jenna, she's going to explode.
Sorry, this is my jam. Genuinely, like, a huge part of what I do is that, because when it suddenly clicked for me, I went from genuinely failing my GCSE English to, like, flying through it for myself. Treat it like a language. Like, genuinely, I teach academic and exam skills as a subject, as a language, because there's so many secret codes. And it really is turning it into that game. And I have a three-pronged approach, which I like shout from the treetops to anyone who wants to listen, which is, one, decode it like a language, translate it. And I'm actually in the process of figuring out recording demonstrations to explain what I mean, because I can go on a whole rant.
Tuesday, please.
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad shout. And the second thing is to use the marks to play the game and use it like genuinely like a board game kind of style. And that goes hand in hand with your mark scheme for subjects like English. It's using those AOs and doing the same sort of thing. And genuinely, I really should make an actual board game out of it at this point, because that is kind of what we do, is that sort of approach. And I do it, it works for the way that you analyze any kind of text. It works for people who are really, really mathsy too, because that kind of STEM logic approach is exactly, and you can like genuinely use that same formula to answering any written question, whether it's a maths question, a science question, an English question, an A-level history question. And it kind of, I haven't tested it enough, but it does also work for dissertations at like undergrad level so far. And it just gives you that formula, and it doesn't matter whether you are someone who is more, whatever the opposite of a STEM brain is, a literary brain, a brain, whatever that is, like genuinely.
Artsy-fartsy, I think.
I don't know, because a lot of, like, I'm working with one young person at the moment who is very, like, not so much on the artsy side, but, like, also not STEM, and it's, like, this literary and philosophy and English. And
ooh, I love this student.
Yeah,
so,
I love
so
it.
So this is what occurs to me from what you're describing, and it aligns closely with what Paul's saying as well. You have the freedom to really focus on, and Helen, to really focus on the exam skills, teach it like a language, get creative about how you teach it, whether you're slaying or whether you're playing a board game, whether you're decoding, you're teaching them a set of skills that aren't on the timetable, right? So exam technique as a subject is not covered in GCSE at all. And so you've put yourself in the place of an academic mentor. You've made your decision as a professional to pivot from at a certain point from subject specialism to this transferable domain of exam technique to help your students to unlock the doors that they need to unlock. So you're saying, and this is my next topic here, the parent comes to you to say, help my child in your subject. And you're taking a view that it could be that it's not only that they need the material, they also know how to apply the material to the exam. What are your thoughts on that? Go on, Jenna, go on, go on.
I think it goes way further than that. I don't think it's about, and I hate teaching to exams. I hate the concept. I genuinely have turned down quite a significant amount of money over the last couple of years because I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. These skills are not, the one of the reasons why I teach completely cross-curricularly that is because like you can apply this to literally anything. And I teach as part of I teach enrichment and academic mentoring is like the kind of main kind of thing of what I do. And it's because this applies to everything. Like you can frame it specifically around autism or communication if you want to, in the in order to understand human behavior and exist in a world of neurotypicals, you have to be able to decode stuff and communicate with people in a way that is their way of communicating and to show other people to communicate with you. And so it applies to that. It applies to creating your own creativity. It applies to just that cognitive load that is required even for neurotypicals to deal with a constant onslaught of information. It's all about just streamlining everything and just making things a bit less stressful and overwhelming. And when so there's pressure around
it. Isn't it? Because on the one hand, you're talking about streamlining. On the other hand, you're talking about enrichment. And Helen's talking about spillover effects. And actually, it is the same. It's just far more organic and natural and interesting and juicy and all the things that we love. But I use the P word, parent. And I want to know what parents think about who you are as a tutor and whether they want a teacherish tutor, a qualified teacher, because it makes them feel safe, or whether they can understand that you're going to go off piece with their student, with their child, or whether they understand that it doesn't matter either way as long as you've got fantastic track record. Come on, Helen Osmond. The Atkins Greig have been ridiculously quiet this session, and I'd love to hear from you when you're ready. Go ahead, Helen.
I think it very much depends on the parent. I am open from the get-go. I do not hold QTS, but I now have enough years and enough testimonials and background that people will take it. It's more word of mouth and those reviews that they're going to do it than the fact that I hold QTS. That's the big one. But I would know of parents that only want a teacher because they feel, I don't know whether some tutors have a rep for maybe trying to do it as a quick way to get some money, but not really understanding.
I think the phrase is side hustle.
That's the phrase, thank you. How to get a student through an exam. And to be fair, I know I don't like teaching to the test, but they have to pass GCSE maths or an equivalent. Tutoring is not plan B. Thanks, Julia. I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry, my darling. You're saying that some parents mind and some parents don't. But the point is that you are a professional tutor. Your tutoring is not your plan B, it's absolutely your plan A. So how do you show them? So you're saying that currently you have all these testimonials, but when you and I first met, you had, hello, yeah, nice to see you. When you and I first met, you had 4 years fewer testimonials than you do now.
Yes.
So tell me about who you were at that moment and how you helped yourself.
That's a really good, I got to think back 4 years. We were mid-COVID.
Oh, well, you came in and you described yourself as wacky.
I think we've changed that to quirky now.
You have. We've come a long way.
There's development in the wacky levels. I think the journey I've kind of in those 4 years, I've got more of a businessy head. I was doing absolutely fine with word of mouth and full at word of mouth. A little bit of agency work, mainly my own. But since then, I have grown as a professional, I think, rather than doing it. It's not so much the tutor, it's me as a professional person. That's the thing that's changed in those 4 years. In terms of the wacky, quirky, I find that actually quite works for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because most students are in school for however many hours of a day. They come out of school, they don't want another strict teacher that's telling them, and you can't set them detention. And good luck getting them to do homework in some cases. They don't want that environment. Having somebody else that can sit there, be a little bit quirky, go off piste if necessary, chat about what they've done. I'm a human being. I'm not a figure of authority in the same way. And I have seen this on reviews that will be coming out chatty. It's fine. They don't mind. Yeah. They'll pivot where it needs to be.
Yeah.
You know that I work with Benjamin. We had timey-wimey the other day.
That's my 16-year-old. You did. You had timey-wimey,
wibbly-wobbly. Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. And it's got... And we got down, went down a David Tennant route. We were only there for 5-10 minutes, yeah, and then we went back to the maths. But just having that freedom and that, they feel like they can come to me and go, Helen, I really didn't get this today in school. It's okay to tell me that. I'm not going to judge them for it. I'm not going to, okay, fine. Would you like to go over it now? We'll have another go. We can chat it through. You can tell me where the problem is. 1 to 30, they're rarely going to be able
hold
to.
Hold on, pause. So what I haven't said before, and it is really important, is that there is nobody here slamming teachers. Absolutely not. And we're also not even slamming school, but we are noticing the challenges that the adults and the children face in school. And we're noticing what we bring that's different. Since we opened this conversation, Sue and Jan have both arrived. And what's useful is they haven't messed with our balance because one is a qualified teacher and the other is not. Yes, Jan, we are talking about whether you need to be a qualified teacher to be a tutor. So Sue, can I call on you first, please? You just give us a quick overview of you were a qualified teacher and you pivoted into being a tutor and what that difference in that role looks like for you, please.
I had worked in schools on and off for about 15-20 years. I got to the stage where I was probably, I mean, I think having QTS is a distinct bonus. I think it makes parents feel safe. And I appreciate there are lots of tutors who don't hold that, who do very well. But I can only speak for my demographic and the parents actually, they don't ask to see DBS. They don't care that I've got a master's in my subject. They don't care that I'm actually got experience teaching primary children. So I've got masters in English. They will still come and ask me to teach maths because they have that kind of security in it.
And there's so many assumptions in that.
Oh, there are. I mean, I find it extraordinary what parents do require and what they don't require. I would want, if I tutor from my home, I have a classroom. So they are dropping off children. My youngest is a six into the house of someone without ever asking to see a DBS. Yeah. Right. Without, you know, they don't ask that, but I'm a teacher. I've been in the classroom. That makes them feel safe. And it also means that the contacts made through our local, the school I was at last belongs to a coastal alliance. So there's quite a lot of networking going on there, which meant that when it became very clear that, I'm not going to say I wasn't a good teacher, but I am going to say I probably wasn't very easily managed teacher because we would have situations
there as well.
Well, the head teacher would come and say, what Ofsted has, you know, we've seen this, Ofsted would like this. The whole of your year group's going to have the same vocabulary on their walls because Ofsted likes consistency. And I would just say, okay, show me the evidence that this will improve their learning. I'm an evidence-based teacher. And, you know, if it will improve their learning journey, fine. Yeah. And if it won't, sorry, I'm really very busy. We can talk about this later.
Show me the evidence is a very, very strong response.
Because there usually isn't very much. Because let's face it, in schools, and Paul, I'm guessing by the smile on your face, you've worked in schools. if you've worked in them for any length of time, what goes around comes around. Every new initiative is an old initiative rehashed.
So let me just pause you there, Sue, because I know that we've discussed professional development in the past. And I think really here what I want to talk about is what being a teacher is that being a tutor isn't. Or what being a tutor is that being a teacher isn't, what that distinction is.
I think the benefit of having spent time in the classroom is having an understanding of where individual children fit in that broad spectrum. So if a child comes along, and I'm not saying you don't develop that, Helen, but I think when you first go into it, a child comes in and you think, yeah, you're working age appropriate for year whatever.
Let me then question you, because I agree with you that you have context and that that's useful. I would love to know what the flip side of that is in terms of making assumptions. I know children like you in the classroom, and therefore I'm going to handle you in these ways and make these limiting decisions about you. Does that resonate?
I think that would be true if in the classroom you were a teacher that took just data or took just the notes from the previous year's teacher. And I think that that's useful. But I would, in the classroom, when you'd got the new year group, you'd have the conversation with the previous teacher. I would make notes about that. And then I'd put them in the bottom of my drawer for the first half term so that I had formed my own opinions. I just think you've got the, in a year tutoring, I will average about 25 to 30 students over the year because I have them for a long time. In primary school setting, if you're setting for maths, you're setting for English and you've got a specialism, I might have been teaching 100 children a year. So it just gives you that wider pool to look at. And if you're in secondary, it's vastly more than that. You will be dealing with hundreds of children each year. Yeah. So it just gives
Paul,
you that.
I'm looking at you again there, because you'll have had lots and lots of children pass under your nose over the course of a year, won't you?
No child is exactly the same. But you do, it reminds me a bit of the Agatha Christie Miss Marple, who solved her crimes because this person reminded her of Lady What's-Its maid who stole some pickled shrimps. I think you do get those sort of connections. I've seen that before. I'm getting that kind of feeling.
Well, that's exactly what expertise is. Yeah? Yeah. However you gain it, that's expertise. You have enough domain knowledge. You have enough experience for things to rhyme, for things to become familiar, and you know what you're looking at. And that has downsides as well as upsides, because you have the curse of the expert. You forget what that stage was when you didn't know. And I think, Jan, the question that you just brought in the chat is perfect. Perfectly timed for exactly that reason. You said, what actually is the difference between a teacher and a tutor? Now, to be specific in this conversation, we are actually talking about qualified teacher status, which in the States is a certified teacher status, which means that you have completed some professional training that has qualified you to be a teacher. And to work in the state schools in the UK, you need to be a qualified teacher. Private schools don't require it. They would be perfectly happy with Sue's MA and they wouldn't require her teaching qualification. And what we're trying to do is unpick this assumption that a qualified teacher is a good choice for a professional tutor. And you can hear that I'm being really, really careful with my language, because many of us are qualified teachers who have decided to repurpose our skill set to redress some of the things that we weren't able to do in the classroom. And that's the story for many of us. But there is a whole nother set of tutors who are awesomely effective and make massive improvements in children's outcomes by not being teacherish. The fact that you don't have qualified teacher status is exactly your asset. So Dee, you've just unmuted yourself, which means that you've got something to share on the subject.
Reflecting on, I mean, I retrained as a teacher when I turned 40 during my PGCE year. And I'd been in a teaching environment for a couple of years before that when I went to the Met Office College. And what I think drove me away from the classroom was classroom management, was behaviour management. It was that aspect of teaching. It was that aspect of having the students in an environment, in a mindset where they would then be able to do the learning that I was struggling with. And the fact that I was at that stage undiagnosed, but on the spectrum and just not coping well with that environment probably didn't help, combined with my need to be a perfectionist to produce 100% brilliant lessons, et cetera, et cetera. And that combination of factors drove me away into a teaching environment where that classroom management was going to be much less of an issue because of the environment that I was in.
Yeah.
And I had done one-to-one tutoring while I had been teaching, And when I left the classroom, I continued doing one or two students a year. And I gradually realized that I got as much joy, if not more joy, out of that one-to-one interaction as I did from a classroom environment. So when I walked away from the classroom environment in 2020, tutoring was an obvious avenue to explore because I knew I enjoyed it, I knew I had something to offer, and I still needed to earn an income.
I feel like what you've done is you've, and we hadn't brought up classroom management before, so that was really, really helpful. And I think what we're seeing is that the role of a teacher is teaching and learning. It is also classroom management, and as Paul and Sue have both alluded to, it's also working in an organization, a really complex organization with senior leaders who are under pressure and put you under pressure, and that takes its toll as well. And we've all spoken about our own diagnoses here. And maybe do you need to be a qualified teacher to be a qualified tutor is the wrong question, because the whole point is that those of us who can't thrive in a classroom or don't want to work in a school can do extremely well as an educator outside of the school walls. And so what it begins to be is another route. A fantastic alternative, enabling, gentler route that builds out the population of educators. Yeah, so there are more able educators to support our students if they don't need to be qualified teachers. So just for a second, and Mandy, I'm coming back to my question for you in a second about being an LSA and then coming back to being a tutor, but I just wanted to think about near peer tutors for a second. Has anybody had any experience of sixth form tutors, undergrad tutors, postgrad tutors who are making wonderful, who are providing wonderful support for tutors? What are your thoughts about those near peer tutors, how they compare to what you offer and other qualified or non-qualified tutors? What are your thoughts? Jan, go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually want to share my own experience as an undergrad tutor myself. So the first time when I became a tutor was after graduating from high school. And by that time, it was during summer holiday and I wanted to earn some pocket money. So my mom had like a friend whose child is, I think, in secondary school. And his dad wanted me to tutor his son English. So that was my very first tutoring job. And to be honest, I feel much closer with the child because we are just maybe 5 or 4 years old apart. So he doesn't really take me as a teacher. He can also share with me something about his life. So I feel like with this kind of undergrad or postgrad tutor, you definitely feel like closer the connection with them, and probably you're more willing to open yourself up to that person. So it's not just about academic learning, but also building the connection with that teacher.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think that there's a role modeling element there as well.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
you're
Right.
closer in age and further along the same path.
Yes, exactly. So I feel like it has definitely a lot of benefits. And if you are a good tutor, it doesn't matter whether you have qualification or not, as long as you can still bring that positive influence to that child.
So I think that question about qualifications is interesting. I had a conversation with a qualified tutor member recently who was deeply frustrated about the fact that her teaching qualification wasn't recognized because it was on the vocational track. It was pettles and kettles. I don't know if you know what those are, but those are, yeah. So it's a different route to the PGCE route that most teachers take. And she was so frustrated that it wasn't recognized. Now, what should a parent look for in a tutor becomes hidden behind this proxy of a qualified teacher or a Cambridge degree, right? And actually, what a parent should be looking for in a tutor is somebody, I believe, who is safe, skilled, and supported. And what that looks like, Jan, so you're saying, it doesn't matter if they're qualified, if they're a good tutor, sort of, but the parent's making an investment and the child really just has one shot to be helped in this moment. And we want to make sure that it's the right help. So there must be something in place. And you can hear my agenda here because I live for this. there must be something in place that identifies genuinely what is a good tutor, regardless of whether or not they are a qualified teacher, so that it can stand alone as its own role, as its own route, as its own profession. And if we don't have that, then it's ad hoc, and it is the Wild West, and we are stabbing in the dark. So parents are leaning on Sue's qualified teacher status and making tons of assumptions that since the other parents in the playground are happy with Sue and she's a qualified teacher, probably they're happy with Sue because she's a qualified teacher. Whereas we in this room know that they're happy with Sue, and I'm so sorry I'm picking on you, but I know you can cope with it. They're happy with Sue because of all the things that she does for every child who comes into her, and they don't ask those questions. They don't even ask about DBS. But we in this room know that there is an excellence that we deliver that it's for us to unpick and for us to articulate. And until we do that, parents will rely on qualified teacher status. It's a proxy. It's as close as you can get. Mandy, I'm stepping down from my soapbox now, Dolly. Tell me, please, when you were in LSA, yes, what did you do? And how does it compare to how you tutor now as a qualified teacher?
I think I've just got a lot more confidence now as a qualified teacher. So I'm kind of happy that I know what I'm talking about, whereas I'd often doubt myself as a TA. So I think that's a big thing. I feel a lot more confident.
I want to hear more, but let me just ask you for a second. Were you right to doubt yourself, or were you doing the right things? Which is to say, once you gained that qualification, during that process, did you say, oh, I was right all along? Or did you say, oh, I was doing it wrong and I need to do it like this?
Not wrong, but different.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it depends on who you have as a mentor,
yeah,
how they teach, the different teachers that you've gone to watch teaching. It all depends on lots of things, but
yeah,
I had some really good mentors, and I think that helped me gain a lot more confidence that what I was doing was right.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. And Helen's mentioning CPD as well. It's that sort of lifelong learning that actually you go into training because, and I've seen Dee do this 100 times, because it gives you the confidence, it builds you up. You're asking your own questions, you're doing your own reading, you're improving your practice.
Yeah, and I'm very big with CPD. I do a lot of my own CPD because things are just constantly changing. And
so tell me then, how do you direct your CPD as a tutor now that you don't have school leadership telling you what you need to study this week?
Just because I know things that I'm not always 100% on. So, you know, with children with different special needs. And so I'm always looking at CPD around children with SEND. So,
That's really helpful because that gives you, you know, something really specific to niche down into, doesn't it? I don't know enough about autism, or I can learn more about, you know, PDA, and therefore I can go and niche down into that. But I'd love to ask you, Mandy, do you know what you're good at?
Yeah. Well, I'm good at building relationships with children. I can, you know, have great conversations with them. So that again really helps with confidence because I know that, you know, I can build a good relationship with children. I don't worry about that. I don't worry about those awkward silences because I know I've always got something to chat to them about.
That's lovely. There's been a whole lot of conversation about chatting here, isn't there? And I get a strong sense, Mandy, that your students love and trust you.
And that
becomes your USP.
Yes,
and Jenna's is enrichment, and Helen's is being relatable, and each of us has our own USP, and that's what we begin to lean into so that we build our own approach. Now, I want to give the last section of this conversation to Jenna's question about how do you explain when somebody comes back to you and says, oh, I really think that I only want to work with a qualified teacher. Jenna, do you want to articulate the question? We'll see if we can pull up some answers together.
I have my name. Sorry, I was typing a response to someone.
Okay, so the chat has been particularly fantastic, and that's exactly how it should be. And it caught my eye that Jenna said, how does one broach the conversation with these folk that are particularly rigid about qualified teacher status, often to the point of their own children's detriment? Jenna, would you, you know, unpack the question for us, and then we'll see if we can answer the question together.
So I guess for me, it's more of a seeking other people's perspectives and experiences and kind of tips and tricks and stuff. So for me, I am very, very neurospicy when it comes to communication. Don't know if you've noticed, I'm a little bit enthusiastic about what I do.
We don't apologize for being happy Labradors around here, my darling.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why I want to explore it with you guys, because I feel like over the last like many, many years that I have been doing this, I have learned to temper myself. And at first it really, really felt like I was suppressing it and stuff. And now I find that it's more about how I make and keep, provide space for other people in conversations, in worldviews and stuff like that. And I feel like one of my strengths, one of my students referred to it as a little, one of my mini superpowers is converting people. Because on paper, I come from an incredibly, privileged background that meets many of the requirements of, you know, ultra high net worth, you know, families who want to be that, just, you know, minus the QTS bit, and minus the degree. But like, and then they meet me and then they work with me. And I mean, you don't see this face and necessarily go, yeah, you're from a...
It's that bit on the left there, Dolly.
Yeah. And I love breaking down those stereotypes. I mean, before this is me in retirement, by the way, when I left London to retire and it did not work. But before that, I was, you know, I was in Parliament a lot, and then sounds like I'm gonna be back in Parliament again regularly sometime soon. But that's kind of my jam. I love it. I think it's a brilliant game to just completely slam and destroy people's stereotypes of what it means to be a tutor, what it means to be disabled, all of those things, because that is kind of the embodiment of my entire life. But it can still be really challenging. And I personally cannot separate the amount of my entire life is this, right? Like I work basically 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Like, I don't have room in my life for people who are like that level of invalidating or whatever. And it does feel
invalidating,
personal. And I am damn good at what I do. And it's taken me a long time to be okay with saying that. It is not an ego thing. It is not me, you know, whatever the words are, and I therefore find it now, because I have a decent success rate of converting people's mind and having a bit of fun with it, and I have had to turn it into a game in order to have those difficult conversations. But how do other people do that? Like, I can't separate
my excellent myself. Hold on, my darling, hold on. Yeah. Pause. Sue, I'm calling on you because you are that person, and I still think that you've got an answer to this question.
If I'm honest, I wouldn't try and change their mind. I think the bottom line is, I mean, I'm quite open with parents. When they come to me, I will say to them, if you are looking for somebody that will deliver school type lessons, you're not coming to the right person. The lessons are organic. Sometimes we'll throw our whole thing out and start again from scratch. I don't mind doing it otherwise. Sometimes they don't, they say, oh yes, I'll be in touch, and they're not, because that's not what they want. I think we need to recognize that there are a lot of children out there and we, each of us, will offer something to some parents. And if we're not their bag, fine, let them go to somewhere else, because there will be plenty of children that want what we are offering.
I love the abundance mindset. I love it. Go on, Jessica.
Like, more than that, though, it's not just about finding the right fit for you, because that doesn't just come down to this idea of QTS, right? It comes down to everything. Like, I could still be quite an academic tutor, and I used to be, right? And I can do that, and sometimes I enjoy that, and I can be that, and sometimes it's just about personality or whatever, right? All of those things come into being that good fit. I think what I'm asking is a lot wider than that. It's not just about prospective parents. It's about people as a whole. Like, the number of times, one of the challenges and one of the conversations that comes up a lot is often tutors, there's a lot of friction between tutors and teachers who are in school. A lot of teachers of our young people frequently don't want to work with or know about the tutors at home and things like that. There's a lot of pockets of that, and that's changing to an extent. And it's really interesting seeing how that's different in different parts of the country, in different parts of the world, and especially post-COVID. But it's not just parents, it is other tutors, it is other teachers, it is people in the wider world, especially as we look to action like the TTA is taking. And that kind of move towards, like, so many people are talking about different things in regulation, in, you know, so many more conversations are happening about tutoring. How do we make this part of a conversation? It's about the conversation, I guess, is my point. Not about changing people's mind, not about getting clients, opening the conversation, seeding thoughts and ideas.
Fascinating. Thank you. Paul, go ahead. No, first unmute and then go ahead.
Yeah, I was just listening, actually. The QTS badge for me is just, it just happened, I just happen to have it. It doesn't really, it's very difficult to say, you know, with that. I get so much by recommendation anyway. And I think it comes down to how you behave with the kids, and that comes across. I don't consider myself teaching when I'm tutoring. It's different, because it is totally different. It's not like being a teacher at school.
And, good, tell me more.
Well, when you're tutoring, you are one-to-one with that kid, and you're invested in that particular kid, and they're all different. So you're spending your time looking at them and seeing how you're going to help them get better. At school as a teacher, it's all about the rules and following the rules and the regulations and, you know, do your tie up and tuck your shirt in and all of that stuff. Well, there's none of that in tutoring. I don't should on the kids at all. You know, it's all about...
should on them.
Yeah, it's all about what they want, you know? And I focus on them. And for me, with the kids, I try and let them know that they can have what they want if they can decide what it is they want. You know, because that's the bottom line.
He's nodding.
What do you really want? And I work my tutoring from there. And then the kids respond, because you can show them that they can have what they want and give them the confidence to do that. And that's really what it's all about. And that's what tutoring is about for me. You know, so I get kids who turn around in a very short time because someone's showing them that what the teachers are telling or what everybody else is telling them is not true. It's about they can have what they want. And it comes down to building confidence.
Right. I'm really, really interested in they can have what they want.
But they don't know. But they don't know.
Come on,
they don't know. It's school is a sausage factory, and they come into a classroom and they're told at the start of the lesson, hopefully, this is what the outcome of this lesson should be. And then I see a tutee and I said, well, and they have math at lesson. Well, what did you do in maths today? And I'm hoping that they're going to be able to tell me what the learning objective was, what the whole point of the lesson was.
And nine times out of 100, they can't. They go, oh, we did something about angles.
I sat nicely. I played the game.
Yeah, exactly.
How do they learn how to choose? How do they learn what they're actually interested in and what their actual intrinsic motivators are besides not get in trouble? If like that, it's kind of the beauty of tutoring. And like, I spend so much time when I first get a new tutor, especially if they've never had a tutor before or if their previous tutor was very much like school at home kind of approach, school just trying to teach that, to explore that, that you can have choice, you can have an interest in your subject.
And Jenna, hold on a second. Sue, you mentioned that your lessons are organic. What did that mean?
Well, first of all, I'm really sad that you're getting that, Dee, because actually I think from a teaching point of view in class, I would never ever be saying this is what's gonna, you know, it would all be about what we're learning today. And at the end, instead of like formal plenaries, it would be okay, I want you to tell the person next to you something you've learned. What do you know now that you didn't know before? Or what are you comfortable now with? So I think that, I don't think school is, I think we need to be careful of implying that school teaching is something rigid and unpleasant for all children. Some children find it so, but not all.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think it's true. I think what happens is that we're quite, there's lots of selection that's happening here. The students that are coming to D have had a specific experience and are communicating in a specific way. So we're always aware that there's quite a tunnel vision. By the time they get to us, we're seeing a very specific thing. And it does become part of the journey to unpeel those.
I think they do offload as well. I think they see their tutor as someone that they can just like splurge and everything awful about school and, you know, this wasn't fair. I think that that's quite often part of that first 5 minutes de-stressing, because before we have any lesson, any learning at all, it's how's your week been? What have you been up to at school? How are you feeling about your learning?
Lovely.
So that we've got a good starting point. When I say organic, very often we'll start on something. I mean, for a start, I will say if the children say we've been doing, I don't know, we were supposed to be learning quadratic equations and I just don't get it. I don't understand this factorization. I might park what we were going to do completely and say, well, get your book out. We'll have a look at it and see. And so that they can go back to their next lesson more confident. So I'm happy to do that.
That's right.
I have had a student who I was teaching English say, what do you know about Oxbow Lakes? I'm not a geography person, but I camp in the New Forest. So let's share what I know about Oxbow Lakes.
Fantastic. So it's that responsiveness that we have that freedom to deliver.
It is. And, you know, sometimes that prepared lesson, you look and you think, oh, no, actually, they've not got the step before that. So we're going to just put that over there. And we're going to go back a step.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So we've got 3 minutes left of this conversation, and what's nice is that it didn't go haywire. Does a tutor need to be a qualified teacher? Could have had you all tearing your hair out and yelling no at the screen, which would have been awkward and embarrassing. Instead, what we've been doing is unpicking what it means to be a professional tutor. And the fact that there's lots of teachers who are wonderful professional tutors and lots of non-qualified teachers who are wonderful professional tutors. Jan was a fantastic undergrad tutor. Jenna is an awesome tutor who doesn't have a degree, apparently, but goes into parliament instead. And those of us who have become qualified teachers at 40 or, you know, since we were younger, right at the start of our careers, it's not irrelevant. It is relevant because it gives us our context. It gives us our expertise. It does define us. It does help us to build out our USP. Paul says, I've seen umpteen students. I've taught 15,000 hours. And that's the benefit that you get from working with Paul. Yeah. So it's not that it's irrelevant. It's just that it's not a deal breaker. And when a parent is choosing a tutor, they just need to know what they're getting. And whose responsibility is that? It's ours. So we as the tutoring profession need to start articulating what good looks like. We need to start asserting what parents can expect from us no guarantees with exam results, thank you very much. Boosts in confidence, enrichment, spillover, exam technique, freedom, enjoyment, organic, responsive lessons. That's what we bring. We bring relationship. We bring being a trusted adult. And those things last forever. And we're really proud of what we do. We don't need to apologize if we don't have qualified teacher status if we don't. And we don't need to sing it from the rooftops if we do, like Paul said. And you've been picked on a lot today, Paul. It's incidental. It's part of your journey, but it doesn't define who you are as a tutor. Thank you so much for this really rich conversation. I've enjoyed it very much. Thanks, Jenna. Thanks, Jan. Thanks, Sue. Thanks, Helen. Thanks, Dee. Thanks, Paul. And thanks, everyone who was following online. All the best. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. See you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.